You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, I hope everybody has had a great week, man. I know it's been a busy one for me. I know I say that a lot, but I'm not lying, man, when I tell y'all this week has been jam-packed and busy. And if it was busy for me, I know it was busy for you. So again, we made it to the end. Happy Friday, man. Hope everybody is blessed, happy, healthy, and enjoying this day so far, man. It's been a little rainy down here in Atlanta. I don't know about anywhere else, but man, we've been getting some crazy rain over these past few days. But I will say it has cooled things off. Going to the gym over the last couple mornings, I typically, most of you don't notice. Well, most of you that listen may or may not notice, but I'm usually getting up at 5:30, 5:45 to get to the gym in the morning. And yeah, it was a little bit cooler than it usually has been. So good signs that fall is on the way, man. It's here. Fall is approaching, which I'm excited about, man. We get some great weather, man. Fall is the best time of the year. I mean, I have and obviously like the holiday season too. But you know, I was born in June. I'm a summer baby, but I do love the fall. So but with that being said, man, we got some good stuff to talk about, man. Some good things going on in the world of sports, man. Excited to jump in and dive in to unpack it all with y'all today. So let's first and foremost, man, let's start off with the news that's coming out of Chicago, man. The Chicago Bulls will be officially retiring Derrick Rose's number one jersey on January 24th, 2026. Again, Derrick Rose's number one jersey is going to be added to the rafters during a post-game ceremony at the United Center following the game that night against the Boston Celtics, excuse me. And this is monumental, man. This is huge. Derrick Rose's number is going to be the fifth jersey actually retired by the Bulls franchise. So he's actually going to be joining Jerry Sloan, who has number four retired, Bob Love, who has number 10 retired, the GOAT MJ, who has number 23 retired, and then Scottie Pippen, who has number 33 retired, man. So nobody will, from this point on, be able to wear the number one jersey once Derrick Rose has that thing hoisted up there in the Raptors at the United Center, man. This is huge, man, especially with Rose, you know, being a Chicago native, you know, and having his jersey retired, man. That's every Chicago, you know, native who plays basketball, who has a dream to be in the NBA. That's their dream, obviously, right? Rose did spend eight seasons in Chicago. Notable accolades of his, he won Rookie of the Year in 2009. He was named the youngest MVP in league history in 2011. He actually led my Bulls to the NBA's best record, number one seed during that season, 62-20, and a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is the furthest the franchise had advanced since 1998, when Jordan retired. You know, Rose also, you know, played for the Knicks, the Pistons, the Timberwolves, Cavs, Grizzlies, through, you know, a span of 723 career games, and had three All-Star game appearances. So this is great to hear. The Bulls also did honor Rose last January after his retirement, which the mayor of Chicago actually proclaimed January 4th to be Derrick Rose Day in the city. So the team president and CEO, you know, made sure that happened, which is great, man. And, you know, I just couldn't be more happy for Derrick Rose. It was, you know, I just remember that time where, you know, when the ACL tear did happen, I remember being in college, man, and that one hurt. You know, it's it's one of those things where you hurt so bad for, you know, somebody like Derrick Rose, who keeps his head down, shows up to work every day, and you knew he, you know, he gave it his all every time he stepped on the court, right? Like, unfortunately, you know, the injury happened to him, and to this day, that we were going to win the NBA Finals, man. The Bulls were winning that thing if he had not gotten injured. I believe that wholeheartedly, that the Bulls would have been hoisting that NBA Finals trophy. But you know what? Sometimes a guy has bigger plans, right? And it's not, you know, what we envision and what we think is going to happen. Sometimes he has, you know, oftentimes, more times than not, he has a separate plan that's always going to be different than ours, right? So that injury does not take away the impact that he had and that he still is having on the game today, man. He changed the way that, you know, people look at and play the game of basketball, right? The way that he attacked the paint, the way that he finished with authority, the way that he, again, stayed out of trouble and was just a great, great teammate. And, you know, Rose didn't talk a lot. Everybody knows that, right? Rose was not one that was going to be very vocal, but he led by example, right? And so, I couldn't be more happier for Derrick and getting his jersey retired. And I might just have to show up for that game, man. I might have to make a trip up there to Chicago and see that happen. If not, I'll definitely be tuning in on TV because I know those tickets are going to go crazy. So we'll see. But, you know, I'm definitely going to be tuning in one way or another, whether it's in person or via my couch in front of my TV. I will be tuning in and watching. So, but again, shout out to D Rose, man. Much love. Next up, man, let's talk about the WNBA, man. Paige Bueckers set a WNBA rookie record, man. That has not been talked about enough, man, in my opinion. Again, the Dallas Wings guard, Paige Bueckers, set a WNBA single game rookie scoring record with 44 points on Wednesday night against Los Angeles. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for the victory. Kelsey Plum did hit a shot before the buzzer to give LA the 81-80 win. But again, Paige Bueckers had an amazing night. She ended up shooting 17-21, making her the first player in WNBA history to shoot at least 80% from the field while scoring 40 or more points. That is huge. And, you know, Paige Bueckers is somebody who's been known for, you know, her efficiency since she was at UConn, right? That's carrying over to the NBA. I mean, and if you don't believe me, look, the rest of the Dallas Wings team, they combined to shoot 31%, right? So they were 12 of 39. Bueckers actually accounted for 55% of her team's points, which is the fifth highest percentage of any player in WNBA history and the highest since 2004 when the Houston's Comets forward Tina Thompson, she actually had 35 of her team's 62 points, which was 56%. But again, Paige Bueckers, man, she's not new to this. She's been true to this. We've seen it again at UConn time and time again. During her senior year at UConn, she helped lead, you know, the Huskies to another championship in the 2025 NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. And she was selected number one by the Dallas Wings. Again, other, you know, accolades of hers. She was actually the fastest player in WA history to reach 200 points, 50 rebounds, and 50 assists. Fastest rookie in WNBA history to secure 500 points and 100 assists. In July of this year, she was actually Rookie of the Month. She's a 2025 WNBA All-Star. And, I mean, the fact that this hasn't been talked about, you know, enough is just, it's crazy to me, right? I was taking a look at, you know, one of the sports talk shows, and they brought this point up too, you know, and this is not to be divisive and start anything, but we know, you know, every time, you know, Caitlin Clark does something, obviously it's going to be blasted and broadcasted all over the place. But you really didn't see a lot of the same for Paige Beckers, right? And I think that the media has to do a better job of, you know, giving love to other players, right, in the WNBA as well, right? And again, I'm not saying that it does. This is other players don't get, you know, shine and they don't get talked about because they do get talked about. I just think that, you know, across the board, let's show a little bit more love, right? This is something that's monumental, right? It has not been done before. So this should be blasted everywhere, you know? And again, shout out to Paige and the great performance. You know, she's been putting on an impressive, you know, rookie season. I think that she's only going to get better from here, right? And again, of course, Caitlin Clark is what many people, you know, say is the face of the WNBA, and she's the one who they say are, you know, is bringing in the sales and things like that. But again, there are some players that should still get some, you know, some love as well, right? Again, I'm not saying this to be divisive. I'm not saying it to start any trouble. But you know, keep uplifting, you know, the women as you know, they're continuing to keep growing in their careers. It's a lot of young talent in the WNBA right now. I mean, you got Angel Reese down in Chicago. You know, I gotta show love to Angel with the Chicago Sky. Camila Cardoso, you know, I think those two together, I mean, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, man, as they continue to grow in their careers. It has been, you know, a little challenging, obviously, you know, starting out for Angel, but she's continuing to get better. You know, she has some, you know, injuries, obviously, but she's going to continue to get better. But, you know, you look at players like, you know, again, I talked about her last week, Aja Wilson, who's, you know, successful, you know, black woman in the NBA, you know, doing her thing. You know, they, you know, you look at, you see things like that, man. You can't, you know, be anything but happy. But, you know, again, shout out to Paige, Paige Beckers, man. I've always been a fan of Paige Beckers, man, when she was at UConn, and I'm glad to see that everything is carrying over into the WNBA. And I can definitely 100% see her winning a championship in the WNBA as well. And looking forward to seeing the day that does happen. So, Paige, keep doing what you're doing. Keep rocking and rolling and keep getting better. But before we go into our next topic, man, you are listening to the Laced Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audio Boom. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, share the show, share the episode. Tell a friend to tell a friend, man. Appreciate all the love and support and everybody who continues to rock with me, man, and stick with me as I'm continuing to give you all more content each and every week, man. So let's jump back into things, man. The SEC, man, just announced a big change for 2026. And if you didn't know, I'm here to tell you, man, that's where I come in because I'm your boy. The SEC is actually going to be moving to a 9-game conference football schedule starting in 2026. So, man, this is wild, right? This is something that we heard this brewing. We heard the conversations of this, you know, potentially happening. But when would it happen was the big question. I'm going to read and tell you guys the details of what this is going to look like. And, you know, going into the next season. So here are the details. The SEC will continue with the single standing. So no divisions, you know, in the past for my SEC fans. And many of you know, there used to be the East and the West division. They took the divisions away. They're going to stay that way. Each school will play 3 annual opponents focused on maintaining traditional rivalries, right? Many traditional rivalries. So, for example, I'll use, of course, Alabama as an example. Traditional rivalries, right? You got Tennessee, you get LSU, and, of course, in-state rival Auburn. Those are for example, if I had to paint this picture for you all, those are three annual opponents, right, that I feel that Alabama should always play on a yearly basis. So that's what that example is saying. There's three opponents that you will always play every single year to maintain those rivalries. If it was Texas, obviously you would have like Oklahoma. You would have because that's the Red River rivalry. Woo, tongue twister right there. You would have that. You would have, of course, their in-state rival, Texas A&M, and don't know who the third would be. You could maybe throw, you know, Georgia in there or something like that. Is there, you know, it could be anybody, right? So you would stick with those same three on an annual basis and maintain those rivalries, which I think would be cool. After that, so each team's remaining six games will actually rotate among the remaining conference schools. So each team will face every other SEC program at least once every 2 years and every opponent home and away in 4 years. So what that's saying is you know, they're going to rotate, you know, the remaining. You'll have your three that you play every year. Then the remaining six, they're going to rotate it. So once every 2 years, you know, you'll play an opponent, right? So until everybody plays everybody, which I do, you know, think is pretty cool. So no more ducking the smoke for you know, certain teams who are avoiding to play other teams. I'm not going to say any names, but, you know, obviously you look at certain school schedules and they haven't had to play, you know, certain teams. You're like, dang, like they haven't played them yet, but. Or it's been maybe been 5 or 10 years since they've even played these opponents. So that's not going to happen anymore, right? So in addition to that, the SEC teams are – so those are your nine games. That's a nine-game SEC schedule. In addition to that, SEC teams are also required to schedule at least one additional high-quality non-conference opponent from either the ACC, the Big Ten, Big 12, or Notre Dame. If you wonder why I'm saying or Notre Dame, is because Notre Dame is independent. They refuse to join a conference for whatever reason. They should just go ahead and go into the Big Ten and stop playing. But that's neither here nor there. We'll let Notre Dame continue to be independent. But before I jump into that, man, just on the point of the SEC moving to a nine game conference schedule, I do like the idea. I think that, you know, this is something, like I said, that has been talked about for a while. A lot of people are, you know, saying this move is the SEC caving into the Big Ten, because the Big Ten obviously was making a bringing that up and talking about this, you know, going to nine game conference schedule because, you know, they're crying. Whatever the Big Ten is always crying about something, but. I couldn't disagree more with that statement that this is the SEC caving into the Big Ten. Again, because the SEC has been considering moving to nine games for a very long time. Now, the College Football Playoff Committee's recent changes, which we're going to talk about and get into in just a moment, those played a factor in finally getting this across the finish line, right? So this was something that was already in the motion, in the works, right? It was more of the committee caving into the SEC's demand that the strength of schedule should be a bigger part of the selection process in the College Football Playoff, which cleared a path for the SEC to give college football fans a better product. Again, what I'm saying is the SEC has always been very adamant, and a lot of fans have been very adamant about the College Football Playoff Committee factoring in weighing strength of schedule when they're selecting their playoff teams, weighing that more, right? Because in the past that we've seen, strength of schedule it almost doesn't matter, right? Because you got teams like Indiana, and don't get me started on Indiana and SMU, because their coaches, they had a lot to say, and you know, I feel like I handled them pretty well, so I won't cook them anymore this episode. But if they have anything else to say, man, I might just have to jump back in, man, and let them know what's up. But yeah, the selection committee is putting in teams like Indiana, who didn't have a top 25 win into the college football playoff only because they had one loss or because that just makes no sense. I mean, if you have a team, yeah, you go undefeated, but who are you playing against? And you have another team, let's say you have a team that's 11-1, and then you have another team like an SEC team who is 10-2, and they play way more quality opponents. Their strength of schedule is light years above what in Indiana or an SMU is because of who they have scheduled. Why then do the teams that have a better strength of schedule get left out and teams get rewarded for playing weak opponents? That's just not that's not it. You know, that's not something that's gonna, you know, go over in a positive way to any fans and the sport, man. It ruins the sport, you know, and I just, strength of schedule needs to be a better and a bigger emphasis on that. But we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it because there has been some changes that have taken place, right? But again, people do laugh about this, and people have said, oh, you know, the SEC can't no longer schedule cupcake opponents late in November. Everybody does that. Like, let's not be stupid now. Everybody schedules a cupcake team late in November right before they play their in-state rival. Or their biggest rival. They're not all in state, but in the SEC, you know, majority of the time it's there's in state rivals. Everybody plays a cupcake right before that because you got Georgia and Georgia Tech at the end. You got Auburn and Bama, of course. You know, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. You know, there's you know, now you Texas and Texas A&M. You have opponents that you're gonna, you know. You have those in-state rivals. Everybody's going to schedule somebody week before that. But no longer, that's not going to, you know, be the case anymore because there's going to be that one extra SEC game that's going to be played. And there's not, honestly, yeah, it'll be one SEC game that's played in November. So in the place of that. So you could have, you know, to play like a LSU and then have to play your biggest in-state rival, you know, back to back. That won't be for Alabama because Bama always plays LSU, you know, in early November. But I'm just saying, not just for Alabama, but just speaking in general, there's teams that may have to play, you know, you play Texas and then you have to turn around and play, you know, one of your biggest, you know, in-state rivals the next week. So it's going to make it interesting. You know, obviously it's going to be exciting. And I think that, you know, the coaches and, you know, the players do look forward to that challenge. So, yeah, I'm happy with the decision to go to 9 games. I think that this is people are making a joke about it, but this is actually is creating a path to get more SEC teams into the college football playoff. Mark my words. I'm telling y'all right now, everybody who's laughing at the SEC having, you know, going to these 9-game schedule. Conference schedule. Remember this. This is going to open up a path to get more teams in the college football playoff from the SEC, and people are going to be salty. Real quick before we move on to talk about the changes that happened in the committee, wanted to, you know, just share some words that the SEC commissioner Greg Sankey had to say about you know, about everything, and he said that, you know, adding a 9th SEC game underscores our university's commitment to delivering the most competitive football schedule in the nation, right? So he also said, this format protects rivalries, like I was touching on before, increases competitive balance that I was touching on before, and it is paired with our requirement to play an additional power opponent, right? So it ensures SEC teams are well prepared to compete and succeed in the college football playoff. Again, this is going to be a good thing, and I'm excited about it, right? And, you know, I don't know, the ACC, you know, you look at other conferences, right? Their commissioner, Jim Phillips, he's like, I like where we're at with 9 game, with 8 games. You know, they're not wanting to move to 9, but I do think that the SEC, because the SEC runs college football, I think with the SEC making this change, it's going to put more pressure on other conferences to have to go to 9 games, right? that pressure is going to be put on him, especially, yeah, you may be okay, Mr. ACC Commissioner, at eight games, but what's going to happen when it comes down to the selection process and you have an SEC team who played an extra conference game against an ACC team who played one less conference game? That strength of schedule is obviously going to be stronger, especially depending on the opponent, and you get left out. Then what happens? Then what is the conversation? I can almost 100% guarantee you it'll be to add another conference game, because it's not going to hit where it hurts until it actually matters come that selection time for the playoffs, right? That's when it starts to make sense. So again, I do think that this is going to put some more pressure on them having to add that other conferences hadn't add the extra conference game. But speaking of the College Football Playoff Committee, let's talk about the changes that I was just referencing earlier. The committee is actually going to use enhanced metrics, right? And so what's going to happen is they're going to announce the first six rankings on November 4th using enhanced metrics that are going to help evaluate this strength of schedule, right? How teams perform against their schedule. And they actually announced this on Wednesday, right? So in the current schedule strength metric, you know, more weight is now going to be applied to games against strong opponents, right? So this is a new added metric called record strength, right? So again, the new metric that they added is called record strength. So this is going to help the committee determine how teams perform against their schedule. There's going to be rewards to those teams that beat the high quality opponents while minimizing the penalty of losing to one, right? So these changes is actually going to also, you know, they're going to provide like a minimal reward for beating a lower quality opponent while imposing a greater penalty for losing to one, right? So if you play a higher quality opponent and beat them, you're obviously going to get more recognition and rewarded for that versus beating a lower quality opponent, right? So again, the pressure is on, right? Schedule higher quality opponents. Now, I do think it's funny that they say higher quality opponent, because how many higher quality opponents are in the ACC and the Big 12? Let's be for real now. If it's me, if I'm any schools from the SEC, look, line up Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State every year. You could throw in, and if we want to go ACC, you could throw in, you know, Clemson, right? And really, maybe Miami. I don't know, but other than that, I mean, give me Clemson, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. You can sprinkle in Notre Dame here and there. So that's just a little sidebar there. But historically, the selection committee, they actually, you know, typically evaluated in this manner, where they said they quote unquote evaluated in this manner, but adding it to the actual computerized metric is going to actually help, you know, codify the process publicly. So they always say, oh, we take into account the strength of schedule, right? They say those things, but then they get up there and do the opposite, right? So now what's going to happen is this is actually going to be built within the computer. It's gonna publicly code these things, right? So it's gonna be public knowledge. We're no longer gonna hear the playoff committee chairman get up there on the selection show and say, oh yeah, we looked at all of that and we just determined that no. Let us see what the differences are, and let's make sense of it, right? And this is also gonna incentivize athletic directors, to continue to schedule more, you know, marquee matchups, right, between blue blood programs without the fear of being penalized for a loss in the committee meeting room. So, right. So what I was saying earlier is you actually are still getting rewarded in a way for scheduling a higher quality opponent, even if you do lose to them, right? Let's just say it's a close game. You lose by, a field goal, right? You're still going to get rewarded if you lose to that opponent because of the simple fact that you were willing enough and you had the enough guts to schedule that opponent, right? So, again, it works out either way, right? I think this is something that, you know, commissioners, they've been pushing for them to consider and get better at this strength of schedule and strength, record strength is what they're calling it. They've been doing this, pushing this over the past 6 months, and it's finally here. So couldn't be more happier that there's going to be more of an emphasis on that, right? Again, it's still going to be a subjective system. It's still going to they're still going to have like other things that they're weighing. So common opponents, head to head results, other circumstances such as injuries to key players, all of that's still going to be weighed in the process. Executive Director Rich Clark of the College Football Playoff Committee said that, you know, all these modifications will help the selection committee as they rank the top 25 teams. So he's also said that we feel these changes will help construct a postseason bracket that recognizes the best performances in teams on the field during the regular season. He wants to thank the veteran selection committee members and data analytics groups for helping implement these changes. So, again, committee, if you don't know how the selection, show and all that works, the committee is going to meet in person on Mondays and Tuesdays. They're going to reveal the rankings each week on ESPN. The second ranking will come out November the 11th. The third is going to be the 18th. The fourth is going to be the 25th. And then the last and final one will be, the fifth will be December 2nd. And then the final one will be December the 7th, known as the selection day, where, again, they're going to pick the 12-team playoff bracket. So with that, man, again, excited that they're finally listening, that we have some changes in place, and, you know, looking forward to it, man, because I can't tell you guys enough how stressed and annoyed I was just sitting there watching those selection shows, and it's just week to week, just that they're not really giving you a legit reason why they do what they do. It's just a vague response of like, this is how we felt, and we felt like this is just with their schedule, and they're beating teams by 30 points every week. And the teams that they're quote unquote beating by 30 points a week are Louisiana Monroe, North Texas, the Citadel, and Furman. It's like, what are we talking about? let's be for real now. Come on now. Like, we need to tighten up. So, seems like they are, making strides to, tighten up. So couldn't be more happier. But again, before we get into our next topic, man, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audio Boom. Please like, comment, subscribe, share, tell a friend, man. Appreciate everybody who is showing love and continuing to rock with me each and every week as I continue to bring you more and more content. Let's talk about what's going on in Dallas, man, with Mr. Jerry Jones. Man. So, we all know, and if you listen back a couple of shows, talked about the news of Michael Parsons requesting the trade, saying that he no longer wants to be in Dallas. Of course, he is fed up with how things have gone when it comes to his contract negotiations or lack thereof. And so he has thus since said, hey, look, I no longer want to be a part of this, man. I need to go. Now, obviously, Jerry Jones, being the man who we know he is, can't see him really trading Michael Parsons just because we've seen this in the past. He is more than willing to franchise tag players and hold you hostage for as long as he can. But some other news just broke the other day because Jerry Jones actually went on a show with Michael Irvin. It was like a video chat, or I guess Michael Irvin had some little show that he was running virtually or whatever, and he got on there talking to Michael Irvin, and he said that the Cowboys offer that they made to Micah Parsons was the richest for a non-QB, right? So let's unpack this, right? Let's take a look at this again. This was Michael Irvin's YouTube channel. So he said the agreement that he believed he made with Micah Parsons would have made him the highest paid guaranteed player, again, non-QB in the NFL. He says, and this is Jerry Jones, says that nobody appreciates Micah Parsons more than the Cowboys or me. He says nobody has ever offered him more money than I have to play football, period. And Jerry Jones did blame Micah Parsons' agent, David Mongetta, again, like he did in early April in the NFL owners meeting. He blamed David for the deal not being finalized as the Cowboys close in on the September 4th opener that they have against the Philadelphia Eagles. He said, we wanted to send the details to the agent. The agent told us to stick it up our, I'm not going to say it, but you can fill in the blank and imagine what. He said, this is what is, he said, just so you're clear, he's saying that that's what the agent told him. Now, pretty sure that he did not say that verbatim, or he did not email that, or whatever Jerry Jones is trying to say. He's been known to exaggerate things, so I'm pretty sure that probably didn't happen that way. But there's been no new negotiations regarding a new deal since that happened. Micah Parsons made that trade request public on August the 1st, where he said he said the meeting that he called for with Jones was about leadership. But when he got into the meeting, that turned quickly to a discussion about his contract because Jerry Jones shifted the conversation. Then Micah Parsons said, look, a deal is not going to be done without my agent, David Mogetta's involvement. So, you know, Jones is saying that, hey, you know, him and Parsons agreed on the length of the deal, guaranteed money and the total money. He's saying that this is something that was agreed upon. And he said, look, I don't understand what Jerry Jones is doing here. He says that, you know, I'm the cat that writes the check. You know, he said Micah's got 3 years with the Cowboys left. At some point, somebody has to save, you know, have the say over the other. At some point, it has to be that way. He's saying, look, his job is managing the check. And, you know, he's, again, blaming that the fact that the agent is involved is what's causing this not to get over the hump, right? And he also, which is pretty, you know, crazy to me too. He's saying that he mentioned that guaranteeing somebody close to $200 million when he discussed Micah Parsons. So he's insinuating that he's this is the type of money that he's offering him, right? And so when he was discussing his contract, you know, we look at other contracts. Myles Garrett at the Browns, he had the highest guarantee for a non-quarterback at $123.5 million. After that, you got Nick Bosa, who's at $119.9 million. And then you have Bengals wide receiver Jamar Chase is at $112 million. So those are the highest non-quarterback contracts right now. And he's saying $200 million is in the ballpark of what he's been talking to Micah Parsons about. Now, there's one of two things that's happening. Either Jerry Jones is lying or Micah Parsons' agent is an idiot and he needs to be fired immediately. But I refuse to believe that Micah Parsons' agent is an idiot. I refuse to believe that. Jerry Jones is trying to paint this picture to make himself look innocent. You know, obviously he and then he goes as far as to say, this is the crazy, you know, when everything that Jerry Jones says is crazy. But he also mentioned that, you know, obviously the agent gets a certain percentage based on, you know, how big their contract is. So for those of you who don't know, you know, kind of how that works when it comes to agents, you know, they do get a certain percentage, right? And so he's saying that him being greedy and wanting that to happen is so that he can build up a name for himself to attract more star athletes. And he's saying that's something that is holding this deal back from moving forward, because he's saying, hey, David Mulgeta is just wanting to get, if he can get Micah Parsons this whatever number they're trying to get at, he gets that percentage off of getting that, you know, to get across the finish line. And he also gets his name out there to be able to get other, you know, athletes in the future to want to work with him, right, and sign with him. So I'm not really sure what to believe, but I feel like if it was that easy, the deal would have already been done, period. I feel like Jerry is obviously, you know, trying to cover for himself, make himself look good. So he's going to point the finger back at the agent and Micah Parsons. We have no idea what was and wasn't said in those rooms. What we do know is Jerry has a funny history with these types of situations. You know, we could go back into, you know, again, I touched on this before, Emmitt Smith requesting a trade in the 90s. You got what happened with Dak Prescott. We got CeeDee Lamb and now Micah Parsons, right? This one just seems way more different. As Micah seems very serious about wanting to be out of Dallas. And look, what's the common denominator in all this, right? I hate to be that guy, but this tends to happen with his black players. I hadn't heard anybody say it yet, but I'm going to say it. It's happening with his black players on the team. Why is it always a situation where the black players are dealing with these contract negotiations? Jerry Jones thinks he's dealing with kids. He thinks he's like a father to them, and they're his children, right? He treats them like they're it's like he's trying to be this dictator, right? And I just don't agree with the way that he does things. I think that the NFL and these things, the way the NFL works and things that has passed him by, right? He thinks that he can be in control at all times and everybody has to bow and bend the knee to whatever he says. And that's absolutely ridiculous. Jerry Jones is, again, NFL and the way that it was, that has passed him by. And the way that he goes about handling his business is not professional, you know, publicly calling out Micah Parsons for being injured and stuff like that. Like, you don't throw your players under the bus. You don't do those things, right? And he's just not very good at what he does. Because if he was, maybe they'd have some Super Bowls recently. I mean, think about all the teams that have not, you know, they haven't gotten there, right? And it's just, I don't know, it's sad to see. But again, people aren't saying it, but I'm saying it. It always tends to happen with the black players on Jerry Jones's teams. And it's ridiculous, man. It really is. But again, I don't personally think that he's going to trade Micah Parsons. I feel like Jerry Jones is going to try to drag this out as far as he can, and he's going to try to make this as stressful as he can until he gets his way, because that's the Jerry Jones way. That is what he does. He's been known to do these things. So, again, we've seen the franchise tags that he's done in the past with Dak Prescott, right? We've seen, you know, deals get stalled out and not get done. And, you know, he always finds a way to somehow in some way get control and stay in control. Right. And so we'll see how this one shakes up. But this just seems a little bit different, y'all. This seems a lot different than in the past. I said a little bit. It seems a lot different, right, than those conversations in the past. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we'll continue to follow it, man. I'll continue to keep y'all updated as I know more. Let's jump into last thing I wanted to touch on today, man, that's happening in the world of sports. We get college football tomorrow, y'all. Can we look? Let me clap it up. Thank you, Jesus. God, you are so good. Yes. Amen. College football is happening tomorrow. Y'all, we will have college football on our TVs tomorrow. It is officially what they call week zero in college football, man. I don't care who's playing. I'm watching it. I'm looking forward to relaxing, kicking back, and enjoying some football, man, because I've missed it oh so much. I've missed it, especially college football. And look, again, like I said, I don't care who's playing, but I will make one prediction. I will talk about one game that's happening tomorrow. It's a noon kickoff. It's going to be happening in Dublin, man. Number 22, Iowa State versus number 17, Kansas State. Definitely looking, you know, forward to this. Obviously, this is a Big 12 rivalry. They're going to be in Dublin for the opener. And again, this is going to be at noon, but I think in Dublin, it'll be like 5 a.m, something crazy like that. It'll be like 5 a.m. or something weird. I have to go back and look at that, at the time difference, but just wanted to, you know, talk about this matchup and give y'all a pick, because this is going to be my first pick of the college football season, man. I'm excited about it, man. So, let's just, you know, quickly, you know, review this matchup, man. I'll give y'all who I'm picking to win. So we got Kansas State, this 3-point favorite in this game. Over under is 51.5. Let's look at Iowa State from 2024. So their overall offensive production, they were averaging 416 yards a game, 255 passing, 160 rushing, and they were averaging 31 points per game. So those categories that I just spoke on, overall offense, they were 39th in the FBS. And then scoring, they were 41st. Overall defensively, they allowed 343 yards per game. Passing yards that they allowed was 165. They allowed 188 rushing yards. And then they allowed 22 points per game. Now, let's look at Kansas State from 2024. Their overall offense, they averaged, they allowed 426 yards per game, which was more than Iowa State. Obviously, passing yards that they averaged was 211 passing yards a game, rushed for 215 yards a game, and then they averaged 30 points per game, which is pretty even with Iowa State. Overall, defensively, they allowed 343 yards per game, which is identical to Iowa State. They allowed 224 passing yards, 118 rushing yards, and then they allowed 23 points per game. So pretty even teams across the board from last year, I would say. Obviously, this is a new season, but they were pretty even in their production last year. Let's look at the team leaders. You know, quarterback, you know, you have, you know, Rocco Beck last year threw for 3,505 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions. Rushing, and this is for Iowa State, I'm sorry. And then rushing-wise, you had Carson Hansen, 752 yards on 151 carries and 13 touchdowns. Leading receiving for Iowa State was Chase Soule with 678 yards, 34 catches, and 3 touchdowns. And then on Kansas State side, you got Avery Johnson, who passed for 2,712 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions with a 58.3 completion percentage. I forgot to mention Rocco Beck for Iowa State had a 59.4 completion percentage. So those guys are pretty even. Rushing-wise for Kansas State, you had Dylan Edwards, who rushed for 546 yards on 74 carries and 5 touchdowns. And then finally, leading in receiving was Jace Brown, with 823 yards, 47 catches, and 5 touchdowns. Now, their last game for each of these teams, Iowa State beat Miami 42-41 in the Pop-Tarts Bowl to finish 11-3 on the season. That game was actually a thriller. I actually watched that. It was a really, really good game. And you had Kansas State. They defeated Rutgers 44-41 in the Rate Bowl. Don't know what kind of bowl game that was, but the Rate Bowl to finish 9-4 on the season. So with this, man, I'm going to roll with a team that is, you know, near and dear to my heart for what they did in 2011. No, actually, yeah. I think I'm going to do it, y'all. This is on the spot now. I think I'm going to roll. I've been going back and forth about this, right? I'm going to roll with the team that is, like I said, near and dear to my heart for what they did in 2011. If you don't know what I'm talking about. In 2011, we had Oklahoma State versus Iowa State. This was late in the season. Iowa State, at the time, they again, were going up against number 2 ranked Ohio State Cowboys. Iowa State upset the undefeated Oklahoma State Cowboys 37-31 in overtime. This was November 18th of 2011. This loss was Oklahoma State's first of the season, like I mentioned. This actually ended their bid for an undefeated national championship run. And who do y'all think went to the national championship in place of that team? It was the Alabama Crimson Tide, baby. That is the reason why Alabama actually got into the national championship to rematch LSU. Again, this was my sophomore year. I can remember like it was yesterday, man, rooting so hard for Iowa State to beat this team because I just didn't know, you know, we really didn't know, you know, if they had a chance in this game. And the game was tight. It was close. It was like, look, man, they got a chance to do this thing. And it went to overtime, and they got it done, man. In Alabama, I can remember just watching the BCS. This is back. Y'all, a lot of y'all don't know nothing about this, man. I would say the younger crowd, when the computer had to decide, right? The BCS, like that was a lot different than what we are now. The computer had to decide. And when Alabama's name flashed in that second spot to go to the national championship, man, we lost it. I mean, you can hear my entire dorm yell at the same time. It was just, man, it was crazy, man. So with that being said, I said all that to say, man, Iowa State, man, near and dear to my heart for what y'all did. I will forever be, you know, indebted to rooting for y'all when the time is right, man. And I think to kick off the college football season, man, I'm gonna roll with Iowa State to knock off Kansas State in Dublin, man. I don't have a score. I think I did come up with a score prediction. I did. Sorry. So I'm going to go Iowa State 28, Kansas State 24. Roll Cyclones. That's all I gotta say. But with that, man, again, I appreciate everybody for tuning in, man. That's all I got for y'all, man. Look, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the weekend, man. Get out, man. Be safe. Whatever it is that you do, man, just enjoy it. Be safe. Be smart. Again, I appreciate the love, the support. Everybody continue to rock with me. Each and every week, man, it's been a pleasure to just continue to share some content with y'all and what's been going through my mind and sharing my takes with y'all, man. So I appreciate all the feedback that I do receive. Continue to please reach out to me, man. Give me feedback, anything that you want to hear, anything that, from a feedback perspective, man, I always receive it and take it, man. So look, y'all be blessed, man. Look, enjoy the rest of y'all's y'all day, y'all weekend, man. I'm out. Peace.